Okay, hang on. Having a technical difficulty. Of course, I'm having a technical difficulty. Headset. For some reason, the music isn't coming through my headset, and it should be.
I heard it come through when you clicked on the second track. I heard it come through.
Okay.
But nothing
Give,
when you had it on the first
yeah.
track.
I'm going to just kill that and reshare it from a fresh tab. And probably other people in chat going, what are they doing? Type O negative.
Is
Okay. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you.
Okay. I figured out what I did wrong, so we should be good to go.
I thought I was waiting for the Telegram message. Can you get out of that? We'll have to go into a new one.
No. I just forgot to switch a setting on my OS. So let me just double check this. There we go. Come down here and try this again. I forgot I have to set the settings for my headset in both the meeting and on my computer.
Oh.
So. There we go.
Awesome.
Yay.
These words drips from her breast. Her hips move, and I can feel what they say. Swaying, they say the mystery salami is gonna get ya, get ya, yeah. Yeah.
We'll be right back. Thank you.
life to struggle to be free from all wrongs. The mists that creep and crawl will drench me in a new world, and so drown.
Thank you.
Alrighty, I just realized that song's gonna run for a couple minutes and we're already at 5:20. Well, we just hit 5:30, so we're switching it over. Oops, I missed the chat in here. I think we're okay on that. So okay. We've had some fun towers going. Can you still hear me there, Fashbird?
I can hear you.
Woo! We got this. We're two fine Aryan women who can achieve anything with the help of usually poor Kermie, who has to troubleshoot our tech.
Yeah.
So we did it. We made it. We made it to the end of camp. It wasn't summer camp. It was winter camp. But we did it. And then we have the camp jamboree and just some fun stuff to go over.
It took us a while, but we did it. Well, the majority of them, I mean, they claimed there were 40,000. There really wasn't, but we did the big ones. So you get the kind of the idea of what they really were for and the lies that they came up with.
Yeah, definitely hit the... Not just the big ones. Like, there were some in there that I think a lot of people had never heard of or never really looked into. So it was a really, really solid look at all the different major claims. I feel like a lot of the claims that we maybe didn't go over were just reiterations of the ones that we did. So possibly. Man, these chats are zooming. So... All right, so we're going over tonight. We've got just a couple different videos, right?
Yep. So we're going to we have a couple shorter ones for Auschwitz, just for a little laugh, and then we have a video that speaks to the consequences of pushing this Holocaust nonsense on children, and we'll finish off with a video I just put together of a bunch of Jew lies. Hopefully, we get a little chuckle from it. And on a light note, you know?
Oh, yeah. Always got to poke fun. Always. So which video did you want to start with? The Odyssey one? Or do we want to go to the two that we didn't watch last week first?
Yes, let's do those ones first.
Okay.
The typhus one and then...
And then the other...
The tour guide.
The based tour guide. Okay. Bring this up...
Problem in Auschwitz was a typhus epidemic, and not only the prisoners died, several guards died of Auschwitz of typhus. The civilian workers who were working in Auschwitz were protesting about it. They didn't want to work in Auschwitz anymore because so many of them were affected with typhus.
An insecticide, Zyklon B, was used in Auschwitz against the lice which carry typhus. This promotional film was made by the Nazis in 1938.
Blausäure, die ja äußerst giftig ist, eignet sich zur Schädlingsbekämpfung ganz besonders. Hier ihre einfachste Anwendungsart. Man lässt sie von porösen Gipswürfeln aufsaugen, die dann in gewöhnlichen Blechbüchsen gasdicht verschlossen werden. Mit Blausäure durchgast man größte Betriebe ohne jede Gefahr für Mensch und Material. Gas! Gas!
You had to get completely undressed and give up all your things, which were then thrown into a boiler where the lice were supposed to be killed. The things were either supposed to be washed or have the lice killed. I can't remember which anymore. The naked women had then to stand on chairs, on two chairs, and the men shaved them. They were shaved in all personal areas.
By 1941, on the Eastern Front,
well, I guess that really was shorter than I thought.
Yeah, I just thought it was good to show that, you know, here we have an example of a Jew telling the truth.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you'd go to another Jew and say, well, how come this Jew says this? Are you saying he's a liar Or are you maybe mistaken about what you're saying? You know, it's when you can use their own words against them.
Absolutely. It's the best thing to do because, like you said, then what are they going to do? Well, it's them. They'll say, oh, I never said that.
Yeah. Oh, they'll try to come up with something. But to try to prove a Jew wrong, I think it was Goebbels who said it's like a moving target. So you might prove them wrong one day, but then the next day they come at you with a different lie. And then you got to keep just proving their lies wrong.
Well, yeah.
No, now I'm just going to reflect back your own words and say, okay, now we'll prove what you're saying.
Yeah. Oh, my. So then what we have, another shorter one.
Yeah.
The tour.
The base to tour guide. I don't know. I got a little chuckle out of it.
This one's going to be good.
Shit. We are now entering the staging area. This would have been where the prisoners were told to undress prior to showering. The Nazis wanted to make sure that everyone was clean and showered prior to gassing them to death. Moving forward, we are now at the entrance of the gas chamber. Please take note of the door in front of you. You will find that this is the only gas chamber in existence to ever use a wooden door. As we enter the chamber, direct your eyes to the left wall. If you look carefully, you will see actual scratch marks in the concrete where the prisoners tried to claw their way to freedom through the wall. Even though fingernails cannot possibly scratch concrete according to the Mohs scale of hardness, this obviously does not apply to Jewish fingernails. Above your head, you will see numerous hatches that were constructed after the liberation of the camp. Zyklon B, a popular pesticide of the day that was used primarily to combat lice, was the gassing agent dropped into the chamber from above. As we make our way through the door to the left, we now enter the crematorium used to dispose of the bodies. What would take all other crematoriums 46 years to dispose of 6 million bodies? The Nazis managed to do it in 6. That being said, both the crematorium and gas chambers were destroyed in 1944, and nothing you've seen today on this tour was actually constructed by Nazis. However, we promise it's historically accurate. That concludes our tour for today. We thank you for joining us here at Auschwitz.
So just remember, the gas chamber now on show at the museum, it was post-war. It was created by the Russians post-war. And they block off the swimming pool from the people taking tours of the group, of the camp. It's just, we just believe it's true. It's true in my mind. It really happened. Are you muted? You're muted, hon.
Mute often. Man, I was building up to a really good point.
Just rewind a little bit.
I was saying how we all know the Jews lie. They lie 6 ways from Sunday. One thing I know I always forget about is, I heard about this a lot growing up too, the lie of omission. That's one of the big ones they're committing specifically regarding the Holo-Hoax. You know, they've reached a point where they're flat out just ignoring things that they even previously claimed because of how ridiculous it is, and hoping what everyone's just going to forget. And yeah, we're here to make sure that that doesn't happen.
Exactly. Look, a good case was with Dachau. Mm-hmm. At Nuremberg, it was considered a death camp. They said 2 million people died in Dachau. They were all burnt. No, and they were all killed in the gas chamber. But come to find out, if you take a tour today of the camp, you'll see that the gas chamber was never used, according to them. Right. And no one was gassed at the camp. And it was just a concentration camp. People, I had someone try to call me out about that on Twitter. And it's like, no, today, yes, if you go and Google it right now, it'll say it was a concentration camp. But when you have pictures of the museum and it says specifically a gas chamber never used, it was at one point considered one. So that's a big lie right there. And as the years go on and the revisionists come out with more info, we'll keep losing more and more camps. Mm-hmm. That's what's been happening. We're down to, some claim 6, some claim 5. So out of all the camps around, they only claim now that there were 5 or 6 death camps.
Yeah.
Though we know they really aren't. But give it a little more time and we'll be there. Mm-hmm. And people, hopefully, the kids will be like, well, what death camp? No, yeah. There were only concentration camps.
Yep. Well, Kermit even just said lie by omission is the single most important linguistic tactic to understand in an information war. And I mean, this is just proof of that exact point. You know, what they don't say is just as damaging. Another thing about lies, what do they also say? The best lies are built on a little bit of truth.
Right.
So there were crematoria. That's a fact in many of these cases. They can take that and then they build this whole mythos around it. You know, that's how they've gotten away. One of the reasons they've gotten away with it for so long, you know.
They didn't really think it through. It was kind of a lot of lies on the spot. Mm-hmm. You know, they kind of threw something together at Nuremberg a couple months after the war ended. So there wasn't a lot of thought put into the math or into the measurements or the logic.
Yeah. I think they really – well, we know they think that we're dumb. We're animals. We're goy, right?
Yes.
We're goy. Animals don't do math. I don't think they ever thought that we'd figure that shit out.
Yeah, like we were just going to be sheep and just go along, you know, along with the shepherd into the slaughterhouse and mm-hmm. that we would never question this. And no, time is now. We can't take this shit too seriously. We can't let it be put into our children's minds that we were all bad and horrible. Mm-hmm. It was nothing but a war, and Germany did nothing different than many other nations did at the time. That's it.
They behaved a damn sight better.
They actually stopped rape and mm-hmm. you know, punished their own people as opposed to the niggers in America who raped their way through, not only here at home, but through France as well. They were the real bad guys, obviously.
Yeah. So, all right. So next we're doing, did you want to do the Odyssey one next, or do you want to do the one you put together next?
Sure, we can do the Odyssey one. So like I said, if we present our children with violence and murder and death and suffering every day, they get sensitized to it, you know, desensitized.
Right.
And it actually, in one case, has led to some kids actually killing some Germans at their college because they just had learned about the Holocaust and here were some Germans. But they actually, I don't know, were self-hating Germans. They liked Jews, but mm-hmm. so I think it's good to see that if it does have an effect on children, you know, to keep telling them that you were the bad guy, you did horrible things, and forever, that's what you're going to be remembered for.
Yeah. All right. Let's get this one going. Oops. Wrong tab.
Now, of course, folks, you know, remember when the Columbine murders took place, it was said that they were racist hate crimes aimed at minorities. Well, it turned out, of course, that one of the Columbine murders was a Jewish boy from a wealthy and politically active Jewish family. They were killing people because they considered blacks and Christians to be inferior. That's something right out of the Talmud. But you know, it's interesting. There was another killing that got in the national news. A German couple teaching at Dartmouth University were butchered in their home. And at the time it happened, it was reported that Holocaust denial literature was found at the home of one of the two boys charged in the murders. Well, let me tell you what the Washington Post reported, and this is not recently. This is a couple years ago, folks. The Washington Post reported that the material found, and this is a direct quote, were more akin to historical document than racist advocacy, and in the material addressed, quote unquote, the inactivity of America during the Holocaust. All right, folks. In other words, the material found in the killer's home was typical propaganda complaining that the United States did not do enough during the Holocaust to save the Jews from Hitler, even though American boys, like my father, fought in World War II to rescue the Jewish people. Now, guess what, folks? That German couple was murdered on Holocaust, remember, the day they were murdered in Vermont at their home near Dartmouth, that was Holocaust Remembrance Day in Germany. That wasn't a coincidence, folks, and you know it. You know, these German professors were actually, I hate to call them this, but this is what they were. They were self-hating Germans who, according to the Washington Post, quote-unquote, believed strongly that Germany should face up to its past. But you see what happened, folks. These boys decided to take vengeance on behalf of the Jews against a German couple on Holocaust Remembrance Day. They're frenzy. They're these sick boys were stoked up to their frenzy by the media constantly talking about the Holocaust. So who did they target? Two German people in their community. They knew they were Germans. But you know, the funny thing is, they didn't understand, those two sick boys didn't understand that these Germans were Germans who loved Jews and hated their own people. Now, that's oddly and sadly a common phenomenon among a lot of modern-day Germans. So the real story is that all this Holocaust propaganda drove these two boys, sick boys obviously, to kill a German couple. Now, this proves exactly what the eminent psychiatrist Dr. Robert John has been saying, that this so-called Holocaust education is constantly exposing children to violences and images of human beings committing violence against others. It desensitizes children. It makes them more capable of violence and less sensitive to humanity. Well, in other words, folks, we've got to get this Holocaust crap out of the schools immediately. As they always say, for the sake of the children, and for that matter, for the sake of anybody else who can be victimized because of this kind of Holocaust crap.
And you know, folks, I'm going to say it here. I know this is going to offend a lot of people, but I'm here to tell you that in my opinion, and in the opinion of others who have looked at it, one of the reasons why we have so many shootings in public schools or at public schools by students and by young people. Now, a lot of you, I know, think it's all a plot. But I think it goes a little deeper than that, folks. I think a lot of these things would happen, whether students are being manipulated or brainwashed to go out and commit these crimes. I think a lot of the violence among young people today, and there's a lot of violence we don't hear about, just basic, plain old violence, if we can call it that. A lot of this has to do with the fact that young people today have been desensitized to pain and suffering, the pain and suffering of others, by all of this Holocaust-centric propaganda that we are constantly being subjected to by the mass media in this country, day in, day out, 24/7, Holocaust this, Holocaust that, Nazi this, Nazi that. Well, hell, we get that from Alex Jones, for God's sake. But we even have forced, required Holocaust education in our public schools. Kids are constantly subjected to these horrible images of dead bodies of people, and not all of them Jews, in the concentration camps at the end of the war, movies that were made by Hollywood filmmaker Billy Wilder when he was part of the Office of Information Control, administered by the U.S. Army, but run by a group of Jewish folks, including CBS media tycoon William Paley at the end of World War II. This Holocaust education, this constant bombardment of Holocaust, really does have a lot to do with the desensitizing of young people in America. We're going to talk more about that when we come back. We're going to have to set a lot of followers of Alex Jones, but hey, we got to talk about it. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. Michael Collins, Piper here, talking about the tragic activities by young people that do happen without the assistance of the CIA or Barack Obama or whatever mechanism you would like to believe is behind these high school shootings. But the fact is, we do have young people every day committing, and unlike anything we've ever seen in the history
of American civilization, and not just in the United States, but around the world. And folks, it is accurate to say that this enforced constant viewing of Holocaust imagery does desensitize young people. Now, I would like to claim this is an original idea. It is not. The late Dr. Robert John, who was a psychiatrist by profession, wrote about this phenomenon, this problem in the pages of, was the Spotlight or American Free Press? My aging mind and memory are failing me, folks, but Dr. Robert John wrote about this from his perspective as a psychiatrist and pointed out that, people would object if they went to their children's school and found that the schools were, particularly the Christians who love Israel and the Jewish people and who like to talk about the Holocaust and how the Jews suffered unlike anybody else in history suffered, these Christians and other people would really be absolutely astounded if they went into a school, a grade school in particular, even a high school, and found students viewing pornographic films or films showing people nude or people showing graphic scenes of violence. They'd be rightly outraged. But folks, I remember watching films of that nature in grade school and high school. Films about the Holocaust. And we get it day in, day out, folks, as I say. Well, Dr. Robert John wrote about this and how it is damaging to the psyches of young people. And you know, I'll tell you what, Dr. John is not the only person who's commented on this. Philip Glidden, an educator from Florida, Dr. Philip Glidden, wrote a very interesting book some years ago entitled Trading on Guilt, Holocaust Education in the Public Schools. Now, I don't know if Dr. Glidden's book is still available, but I do know that there is an article that appears in the January-February 2001 issue of the Barnes Review, a special all-Holocaust issue devoted exclusively to the single most written and talked about historical topic in the Western world today. Well, Dr. Glidden's article refers to Holocaust education. And he writes, he says, most parents object to their children viewing violence on television. To have them subjected to grisly accounts of death and mayhem in the public schools is an ironic twist. In schools where parents believe they have safely entrusted their children, these students may be experiencing trauma themselves without the parents fully understanding what process is being played out. The school, under the impetus of Holocaust education, has become a systematic, controlled environment for propagandizing an increased awareness of the Jewish genocide, that is, the Holocaust. This is not teaching in the conventional sense, but has become the indoctrination of young minds. He says, we must ask ourselves, why do Jews want others to experience the horrors of the Jewish genocide? Do they want public school children to become as traumatized as Jewish children who experienced the real thing? Psychoanalysis of children of survivors and others who had any experience with the genocide reveal that they cannot rid themselves of the memories of persecution. It is this kind of intense association with the nightmares of death that can be transferred to students in the classroom. The only explanations to this question can be that Jews require others to feel their hurt and anxiety so that they can profit by the empathetic transference. Now, folks, you know, here's the bottom line. Here's the bottom line. Should we really be surprised that young people now don't find death and violence to be anything out of the ordinary when they're constantly exposed to it in the form of Holocaust education? We shouldn't be surprised at all, folks, and that's exactly what's happening. We'll never exactly, I'm sure, be able to prove that, although if a Jewish psychologist wanted to prove, as one did try to prove, that anti-Semitism was caused by poor toilet training, and I kid you not, folks, I've talked about that on the program, that would be considered an important
scientific and psychological finding. But I doubt very much that you're ever going to find anybody daring to question the nature of Holocaust education in the schools. Because it is so important. It's so important. After all, folks, only the Jews suffered during World War II. In fact, nobody, we're told, has ever suffered like the Jews. And by God, we're going to know about it because that's what the Jews want. Well, is that having an effect on our young people? Desensitizing them? What do you think? What do you think about it, folks? I think I have a pretty good idea that we could make an argument that at least some of the violence we're seeing today, some of the desensitization of children, does come from the constant bombardment we get from the mass media and academia about this beloved subject that just won't go away, the Holocaust.
Remember to unmute this time. Ha.
Yes. Yeah, I have to agree with them. Uh-huh. We know that Jews use their children, and they say that it's second generational or third generational trauma that they have from the Holocaust. So they then inflict that trauma onto our children.
Yes.
Forever put them in a life of guilt that, you know, they will bow down to the Jews because of lies.
I mean, I know just personally growing up, I mean, I'm German, both all sides going all the way back. And we were raised, like, we were never explicitly told, oh, it's bad to be German, but it was definitely the attitude that was given. Like, don't talk about being German. That's nothing to be proud of. You know, my parents very much pushed any other culture except for German.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, that's kind of like low key. I can only imagine how much worse it was in Germany itself. Teresa even pointed out in the chat, you know, her father talked about his German and Italian neighbors who were taken away on trains to who knows where at the onset of World War II, you know, and that kind of stuff happened a lot. It wasn't just the Japanese that were interred. There were a lot of Germans and even Italians that felt the effects of that at the time.
Yeah. A lot of people don't realize that it was about, I think about 11,000 Germans and about 3,000, Italians were rounded up in the camps. They were not paid out. Like, the Japanese received, I believe, $20,000 apiece.
Yeah.
for the harm that the camp caused. But the Italians and the Germans never received any payments. They never got an apology. They were just used for slave labor.
Yep. There were some friends of my family where she didn't have any pictures of herself as a child until a certain age because, like, they were so recently emigrated to America that I think one or both of her older siblings were born in Germany. So they weren't allowed to have a camera. Like, they weren't actually rounded up. I think they were a certain social class or above. So they kind of skated through that way, but they weren't allowed to have cameras. Their mail was monitored. Ooh. All that stuff. Yeah. Of course, you know, they bought into the brainwashing and the guilt, so.
Well, you know, in their defense, though, they probably were drowning in it. I can't imagine how bad it was for them. I mean, never mind that you're wondering if your husband is going to come home or if your father is going to come home. But I'm sure they started right away with your evil, and that was it. I can't imagine how anyone could handle that.
Yeah. I don't know. It's bad.
But I think, you know, I do think that, of course, it adds to the violence we see from kids now. But I also think a lot of that has to do with the family dynamic as well. We have a lot more single parent homes.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, you need a father and a mother.
Oh, absolutely.
And we've noticed there's like, you know, as the single home parent homes goes up, so don't school shootings. And mm-hmm. of course, you know, the majority of them caused by niggers. So that's not surprising that they'd have, you know, single mother homes.
Yeah. I was just going to say something. It went, it's gone. Dang it. I feel like it was a good point too. I'm having one of those days. Train of thought derailed at station, no survivors. Oh, that's what I was gonna say. Like, I gotta preface this one. I am not trying to be down on anyone who uses the terms white power and white people. Like, absolutely not. I'm, yes, white people. But this is, in my opinion, also something that's contributed to it. We've adopted that term white because we've been beaten with it for so long now. And we're kind of like, okay, if the jackboot fits, we're going to lace that bitch up and stomp you with it. But right. When did we start becoming white people instead of proudly German American, Italian American, you know, English American? I feel as sometimes like I wonder if this is part of that whole breaking us away from our parent cultures.
Oh, I think definitely, definitely.
And if we're not rooted in that, it's like that's what made America strong when it was still white America. You know, it wasn't white America. It was, you could say European America. It was those awesome, you know, little Italies in all the big cities. And, mm-hmm. you know, you go to Germantown, like anyone who's been to Philly and been to Germantown is actually a suburb of Philly. Like you can tell it, you feel like you're somewhere in Germany in some right. little town. And this is what built America, is this heritage. And I feel like just kind of whitewashing us into, well, you're just this bland white culture. Black people don't season their food. It's like, have you ever had a really good schnitzel? Come on now.
Oh, no, you couldn't pay me enough to eat Ethiopian food. I've seen that slop.
Oh,
and the fact that they're using their hands to sop it up, it's just, no.
I had
you take away a people's identity, mm-hmm. and they've got nothing. They've got no roots. And if you have no roots to the nation you're in, the blood and soil, mm-hmm. then it's easier to hand it off to third worlders.
Yeah. It's that stealing of our personalities.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're stealing it with our own inventions, with our own culture, with our own hard work, our money. We're paying for this. We're paying for our genocide.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Filthy says, how about saying Aryan? I'm like, of course we can say Aryan. You can say white people. I'm not saying don't use white people. Like I said, it's like the argument I made the other week about, like, okay, the whole argument over should we use the term Nazi or not. Again, lace that jackboot up and curb stomp something with it.
You know, but like, the way I look at it, so like right now we have abortion. I'm thankful yeah. we have abortion because we'd have 50% more niggers in this country than we do now. But when we get our ethnostate, no, I don't think we need abortion except for very select cases, you know, deformities or
very
rape.
Specific medical necessity, yeah.
Yes. So, no, I don't like abortion, but it's here, so we accept it. Yeah. A lot of people will use the term Nazi. Mm-hmm. It's here. We need to accept it for now. When we get our own homeland back, then we start teaching the proper things.
Yes.
You can't take a person and then start screaming at them about a word while you're trying to teach them a whole world view and why right. we're being killed off. That, you know, that's a lot. You can't really nitpick. We need to just get them on board with, hey, why are they handing our country over? And then we worry about that. So yeah, I see a lot of people saying, well, don't say Nazi, it's wrong. I get you, but if I'm trying to reach someone who isn't right. even there yet, they're going to, you know, that's what they know is Nazi.
Yeah. And that's why I haven't really delved into the whole like issue of using the term white, because it's one of those, just another one of those divides that we see. And, you know, Kermie just said, you know, about not getting caught up in the semantics, and he's absolutely right. It's like one of those topics where I'm like, look, there's a good topic here, people, but I'm afraid to bring it up because everyone's got feelies.
Yeah, it's just, it's kind of a waste of time. We're at the like end game here, you know. We're not going to stand around saying, well, should we match our shoes, or, you know, what color should our hats be? Yes. No, I mean, in 20 years, we will be a minority. Children yep. being born in this country, white children are already a minority. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you could literally be the last white person, white family in your neighborhood. I don't give a fuck what color you wear, or if you call me Nazi or NS, Natsock, bitch, whatever you want to call me, just, yeah. you know, just stand by my side
yeah.
and fight for our people.
Exactly. Exactly. See, now I got us down on a bunny trail. I'm sorry. I do that. Well,
that's good, though. I like going down trails. It's okay.
It is good. It's, I don't know. I said at the beginning of the year about going cow tipping and not putting up with these, oh, you can't touch this and you can't do that. But I'm still trying to be careful about how I do it because I'm not trying to add to the division by any means. So.
No, I think that within our group, we can bring up subjects. Now, arguing them with third worlders, I don't think is very productive. Yeah, I don't give two shits what the Haitian thinks.
Oh, God.
About the term Nazi or what he thinks about Natsox or what we should do in our own country. But within our own people, we can have conversations about things. We should be civil enough to be able to do that.
Yeah. Oh, my. Now that... I had another thought, and that one's gone. I'm going to let that one go because otherwise we'll just be talking indefinitely.
Okay. This is a laid-back show, though.
This is.
Easing out of the camps.
Easing out of the camps. Kermie says, the fash salty bunny trails are awesome. They're pertinent. Aw. We're pertinent. That's almost as good as being bona fide.
There you go.
Oh, my God. So now we have, the Hollow Hoax Tales, put together by our very own Professor Fashbird.
Yeah, I'm by no means a video editor, please. No, I admit that up front. But let me just tell you, though, if I had more time or the drive at this moment, I could have put 4 or 5 hours together of just July's that came out of the Holocaust. What's funny, though, is I see that Truth Nuke is starting a new series, though, about ridiculous lies about the Holocaust, starting with the bear and eagle cage. I thought that was funny, so I'm looking forward to seeing that. But here is just a video of just a bunch of lies. And, we can have a little chuckle.
I like having chuckles. We need more chuckles in this world.
Especially on Mondays, yes.
Yes. All right, let's get her going.
Sitting by this side because I couldn't work. And a German railroad policeman came by and he saw me. And he took out the gun and he made me jump up on that car, which was 6-7 feet off the ground and down. And I had to do it probably 20-30 times. And I knew if I didn't do it, he would have killed me there. So he had his gun out of his holster.
It was not an assassin, not an Gestapo, just a regular...
It was a railroad policeman.
Hausmann.
Hausmann Polizei. And I remember after he left me there, I just passed away. Well, we stayed in that camp. Pardon me? They took me to the... other people who worked with me, my friends. They took me to a shack nearby. And revived me. And, I went back to the camp at the end of the day. And he made me jump up on that car, which was 6-7 feet off the ground.
המפקד של ארשיל 3, היינריך שוורץ היה שמו, באמת ימח שמו, היה פריק של בורא של איגרוף. הוא אמר, אני אקים לי קבוצת מתאגרפים, לשעשוע, בימי ראשון שלא עבדנו, שיעשו קרבות, שואו כמובן, זה לא היה חשוב מי שמנצח.
אותם מתאגרפים יודעים לא רק שזכו לתוספת מזון או בתנאים מועדפים אחרים, הם גם ניצלו את המעמד המיוחד שלהם, הסטטוס המיוחד שלהם כדי לעזור. לכן ניקח את ז'קו רזון כדוגמה, הוא לא הסתפק בניצחונות שלו או בשיפור תנאיו, הוא גם דאג להציל יהודים אחרים, והכל בזכות העובדה שאנשי ה-SS נטו לו חסד והעריכו את היכולות שלו.
הביא אותנו לעולם, למחנה אחר, 3 קילומטר משם, זה היה אושוויץ 3, מונוביץ. אולם אגרוף, אימונים של אגרוף, זירה, ואז ניגש אלינו, מתאגרף שלישי, יותר גבוה, יותר רחב, שהציג את עצמו בצרפתית מאוד לא שוטפת, אבל אפשר להבין אותו. הוא אמר, שמי ז'קי צמנטו, אני אלוף יוון ואלוף המדינות הבלקניות במשקל קל. והוא מסתכל עליי, הוא אומר, תגיד לי, אתה בכלל מתאגרף? אמרתי לו, הוא אומר, זה רעמות. להם יש כמה מומחים, הם יראו מיד בקרב הראשון שלו, אתה הולך מהזירה, אתה הולך לגז. אבל אנחנו נסדר משהו. אני אלך איתך לזירה על הקרב הראשון שלך. אנחנו נביים את הקרב. אני אתן לך לעבור את ההגנה שלי כמה פעמים, כדי שיראו שאתה מבין משהו בגרוף, ושאתה זה גם כמה נקודות, למרות שזה לא היה חשוב, אבל שיראו שאתה מתאגרף, ואנחנו נעביר אותך. האחרת הם שולחים אותך מהזירה לגז. וזה עשינו. אנחנו ביימנו קרב, הוא היה מקצועי, הוא היה מתאגרף מצוין.
Aber wie lange hat er Kontrakt von Amerika? Das Bild hat ihm geschickt an Amerika. Vor der Fahrt hat er das Bild. Aber in der letzten Minute hat er schon gehabt ein Ticket mit den Taten. Er hat schon gehabt, man muss das schon gerichtet vorn. In der letzten Minute hat er gesagt, ich will nicht an Amerika. Ich bin nicht an jüdische Medina. Dann muss er gehen in Amerika, eine jüdische Medina. Aber ich rede doch für 70 Jahre, 75, 80 Jahre zurück. Ich bin ja, ich bin ein Jünger, 14 Jahre. Ich habe gewollt um in Amerika. Bin ich mit dem Mönch gefahren, ist er einfach verbrennt geworden. Er, der Mama, 2 Brüder, 2 Schwestern, verbrennt geworden. 32 Väter mit Mimes, verbrennt geworden. 140 Kinder, Cousinen mit Cousinkes, verbrennt geworden. Ich war wusste, ich bin geblieben im Leben, weiß ich nicht. Eins von meinen Fragen ist, hier alle Menschen, die einen gewähnen Konzentration kämpfen. Oben Frage ist, wie gewinnt Gott? Gott verbrennt 6 Millionen Jahre. Dieser gewesen, ihr Mensch hat Territz. Da muss ich das Jungen einer hat Territz, sollte ihm Jungen liegen. Ein Stück an Territz. Russisch habe ich immer im Leben, ein Stück an Territz. Bis zuvor, ich habe ja ein Territz, ich habe schon mal eine von den Jahren, für alle Holocaust, habe ich schon noch eine, also noch ein Territz, aber bei mir gewesen, der Kommandant für Lager, hat sich verliebt in mein Singen. Vielleicht muss ich jeden Sonntag singen von Lieder, in Deutsch. Und ich bin ein guter Kopier, von Josef Schmidt, Singer. Ihr könnt kaufen dem Tape sein. Was für ein Tender, was für ein Singer. Ein ehrlicher Weg, der Singer von Josef Schmidt. Der Vertreiner, der Mörder, der Gordische. Ich kann nicht sagen, Mörder ist ein Kompliment für ihn. Wir haben einen Mensch, wir haben einen Flieg. Wir gehen spazieren, und wir sehen ihn geschossen. Wir haben gesehen, sie spielt sich in der Mitte. Sie schreien damit, dass ich sowieso ein mies Wort in Deutsch will es nicht sagen. Aber dann kam ich noch über mein Leben. Dann war der Nazis am gewiss, ich muss gehen zu ihm singen. Und er will mich her jeden Sonntag, um sie mich gut gehalten. Ich will mich nehmen in Krematorium. Ich frage mich, ob ich einen Menschen zu Krematorium. Ihm los ab. Er geht zu Kramer hat er geheißen. Obersturmbannführer, das ist ein Kolonel, ein hoher Offizier. Lass ihn ab, Kramer braucht ihn oben. Er fängt mir an, ja.
What do you remember of the treatment of the Germans towards people in Tennessee?
Two things come to my mind when you ask me that, because I didn't have much to do with them. But once I was in the stables, and I was in Carl's room. I don't know whether I was cooking something or what. And all of a sudden, there was a hullabaloo going on. It was Sunday afternoon, and there was some big ado in the stable boy's room, and everybody was running around. And Carl came into the room and said to me, "Don't go out there. and disappeared. Of course I went. And I went into the stable boy's room. Everybody was around the window, and I looked out, and I saw what Carl didn't want me to see. There was a tractor that was driven by an SS man, a low rank on SS man, whom we called Polak, because I think he was Polish. And around the front wheel, wound around the front wheel, was the body of a young man dressed in like Sunday clothes. He had a trench coat on, and he was kind of wound around the wheel. His head was hanging down, and blood was dripping out. And for one moment, I saw his open eyes, and I didn't know whether he was still alive or not. And it looked like nobody knew exactly what to do, and that Polak SS man was standing there in front and just kind of walking around, like, and then disappeared. I don't know why, to get something else. And there, underneath the corpse or the young man, was a bouquet of flowers, wild flowers, which he had picked somewhere. He was obviously, as the boys said later, he was on his way to visit his girlfriend. And this guy, Polak, ran him down on purpose, because this guy was very dangerous. Everybody was afraid of him, worried about him. He would get drunk, and he was very mean.
Against the ground. And they were, and I helped them. And so I spoke the Viennese dialect, and I heard Hangel, he's standing over by one of the things, and he says, we don't have enough people. We need another 16 or 18. And the guy next to him says, let's take the helper. They're standing around over here. Let's take them in. And I said, oh my God, my father is going to kill me if he finds out I went into this place. And they were able to grab me. He said, I should disappear. So I was frantic, and I didn't know what to do. So I looked around, and I couldn't see anything. I couldn't see any place to go. I was exposed, but nobody was looking at me. There was a lot of people milling about between me and all these people were lying on the stretchers. So I decided, I dropped down to the floor, and I figured for the time I'm standing up, maybe they'll find. So I rolled under one of the stretchers. It was good. I was very skinny. I couldn't do that today. So I rolled under one of the stretchers, you know, that wasn't too low to the ground, and I laid there. And then all of a sudden, I hear somebody say, all right, float the rest of the stretch. You know, float, and I said, that's it, I'm dead. The only thing I was worried about is my father is going to be angry. I was terrified what was going to happen to me, but I was afraid of my father, because I knew that if he ever caught me after that, I was going to pay for it dearly, because he'd never forgive me for being so stupid and not doing what he told me to do. That was unacceptable. He says, when life and death is it, you listen. You know? Anyway, so I don't know what I did. I was going back, and I said, I don't know. Whatever. I wasn't meant to die. I moved my head. I was wiggling, and the window behind me gave. And I wiggled myself back and into the window, and I turned myself around, at least I didn't fall backwards, and I got there, and the window gave, I pushed it in, and it was pitch black. And I said, well, if I go there, I'll be dead, and if they don't clean it up for me, so I might as well go in there. And I thought I was going to break my neck or something. I don't know what was going to happen. And I launched myself in there, and I fell about this much. There was a pile of coal, and I fell onto the coal, and I pushed the window closed, and I laid there. And I heard them loading the stretchers, and I heard the train pull out, and it got night, and I was there, and I heard the rats and the mice, and I was terrified, and I was crying, and I was afraid to make a noise. I was afraid somebody was patrolling outside might hear me cry, and I was... It was a very difficult night, and I was there, and then the morning came, the train had pulled out, and I opened up, and I looked around, there was nobody, and I went to my father's place, and I was locking over the scene, and he says, baby, what happened? I was black. I had a light beige coat on, and this pale cream colored, champagne colored scarf. Well, anyway, I was still alive, and I was crying and dirty and everything. So then they let me stay over there, because nobody had seen me come in. And until the afternoon, and then my father went and got me some food coupons, and then I went back, and they said, and when I came back to my room, you know, I was legit, so I could go back. Nobody was going to come look for me, and that was the last ranch, but nothing went after that anymore. So they said, where were you? I said, I had to do something. He said, they came looking for you. You were supposed to be in the ranch, but they came, they were here three times. Where were you? I said, well, I'm here now.
And eventually I got used to being there, and she kept telling me, if anybody comes, you have to make yourself really small and be quiet and not say anything and not cry and hold your breath and don't make any movement. because they want to kill you. And of course, I didn't believe it. And then one morning, very early, there's a commotion outside. I hear all this noise. And I look through the cracks in the barn, and there are three soldiers in green uniforms with black feathers in their hats, and they're slapping this woman around. Her name was Elizabeth, and they're slapping her and says, "Where's the Jew? We know you're hiding a Jew. Where's the Jew?" She says, "There's no Jew. What are you talking about?" And she's bleeding from the nose, and she's kind of crying, and I'm horrified. At this point, I realize this is serious, and I scooch under the hay, under the eaves, and they were beating her, and then she says, "Go up and look at my house. Go find the Jew." So they went up to her house, and they were ransacking her house and throwing her dishes out the window and breaking stuff, really mad that they couldn't find somebody because someone told them there was a Jew hiding. And then they came down from the house, and they were going past the barn, leaving, and one of them says, "Wait a minute. How about going up into that barn? Maybe the Jew is up there." And I remember the noise their boots made on the rickety stairs. They were coming up with these big, big boots. And I was under the eaves, and I was holding my breath, but I was terrified that they could hear my heart because it sounded to me like a drum. It was going so loud. And I'm holding my breath, and they're coming closer and closer. And I remember shutting my eyes. You tend to shut your eyes when you're scared, thinking, well, maybe if I don't see them, they don't see me. And I'm under the hay, and they come closer and closer, and they're using their bayonets to look in the hay. They're moving the hay around to see if there's anyone hiding. And suddenly I open one eye, and there's a boot right next to my face. And then the bayonet comes down 1 inch from my face, boom, and it gets stuck in the wood. And it got stuck in the wood. He pulled it out, and they left. And then when I realized what it means to die, it means that somebody wants to stick a knife in your head. I was not complaining after that. I believed her. And they left. For some reason, they just left. And then she came to see me, and I couldn't even stand up. My legs were like water. I was trembling. I couldn't stand for about a whole day. I was absolutely terrified.
Now, anybody ever heard of Dr. Mengele? Dr. Mengele was an experimental doctor, used to be experiments on children, Jews, okay? He was doing the experiments, all kind of experiments. And Dr. Mengele was looking for experimental kids. So he came into the bar I was in, and I was speaking for Dr. Mengele for experiments, okay? You know, Dr. Mengele used to make lampshades on skin. I'll show you pictures later. Because they want to experiment how to take off the German soldiers. Let's say they used to get burned or get shot, you know, a certain type of wood. They needed, you know, how to fix the wounds or things like that. So they used to experimental and they used to have special injections so the skin used to come off, okay? And they made lampshades from them. So as I told you, they came in, and guess what? I was picked for experimental lager. They took me out for Lager A. They took me to Lager D in Birkenau, the experimental barrack. I was there, you know, to wait for my turn to do some experiments. But meanwhile, they needed people to work in the fields, you know, because anybody used to come there, they used to kill them. They never had enough workers to work in the fields for harvesting in the fall. So they came into Dr. Mengele's barrack, and I was picked to go work in the fields. They took me out to a camp called Brunner concentration camp. It was a sub-camp of Auschwitz. It was like 20 miles away from Auschwitz. And they put me in that camp to work in the fields. I was working in the fields. Also, Russian prisoners of war, there are a lot of them. And they used to took care to watch on the kids, right? As I tell you, I forgot. In Auschwitz, we used to get the bread. You know what the bread was made of? We used to get 2 slices of bread a day. You know what the bread was made of? 50% sawdust and 50% flour. That's what we ate.
I look to add the... I don't know what direction that we were guided. There were a big fire, like a bonfire, like a Christmas tree. All this comes back to me like that. And little baby's faces twisted in pain, looking at me, and little arms and legs hanging out of the flame. And then, because many of the children were thrown into the flame, grabbed from the mother's arm and thrown into the flame. But naturally, we didn't know where we are. And then some of the girls around me started to scream that they are burning us alive. And then we realized that the stench what we fear is the burning flesh of human and the fat of human and so on. That's what happened the first night. When we came to the barracks, the girls started to, I didn't speak the previous, not one word after that scene. And when the girls came into the barracks where we were, then they were screaming and crying, where are our parents and sisters and brothers? And one of the SS men walked up and with the rubber stick pointed to the sky and said, look up, what do you see? And what we have seen, very heavy black smoke covering the whole sky. And he was laughing. He said, there are your sisters and parents, and there you are going. And he turned around and walked away laughing. Even today, many times I hear the laugh. That was my first day in Auschwitz.
Oh, what did you have any job assignment at that point when you were in Auschwitz?
Yeah, okay, that's another thing I wanted to tell you about. No, we didn't have job assignment, but one day they took us to pick up some, to carry rocks, and they took us to all the way to the end of the forest, somewhere the end of the camp, and or outside the camp. I think it was outside the camp, and this guard took us to a little place that they had little Japanese little bridges like, and then I noticed they had dugs like a like in the cemetery, you know, the holes dug out, but they were on a large scale, like, you know, larger than for one person, and I noticed like wax grease with little bones sticking out and things like that you could see, and the guard later on told us, this is the soap, gonna be the soap that you're using from your parents that you're gonna be washing yourself with. And
now, let me understand this correctly. A guard told you that later or at that time?
Later, before we were ready to go home, before we were ready to go back. We somehow were there. We didn't work much, but we were carrying some stones. It was very muddy. It was raining. We stayed till late. The sun was going down. It was cloudy. The sky was red, and it was such an eerie feeling. I said, will I wind up there? Are we going to wind up there sooner or later? You know. And
did you believe that?
Yeah. It was in black and white. It was there. They were, some of them were half full, some of them were quarter, some of them were almost about a foot away from the top. So, and it was like a dirty green, yellowish brown, you know, wax-like, and grease. And you could see occasionally, you know, bones or chips of a thing. And that's why I wrote a whole chapter about it, called the Soap Cemetery.
And that was near Auschwitz?
And that was in Auschwitz.
In August 16, 1943, my father's ghetto was liquidated, and that's when he arrived in the first of his six concentration and labor camps. My dad was 15 years old. The Germans forced everyone to the outskirts of town, loaded them onto trains, and at that time, my father was separated from his mother, his brother, and his sister. The train had five rail cars, and they were transporting all the prisoners to Treblinka. Fortunately, the last of the two train cars were detached from the transport and sat idle on the railway for 3 days. 150 people to a car without food, water, and bathrooms. The only way to breathe was through tiny slits at the very top of the rail car. My dad was in one of those two rail cars. To stay alive, he drank his own urine to stay hydrated. During one of the periodic selection times, my dad faced Dr. Mengele, who is known as the Angel of Death. All my dad could remember was this man wore white, clean gloves. As time went on, he was sent to another part of the camp, Birkenau, and that was the labor portion where my father's arm was branded. The Germans were amazing with their record keeping, but Auschwitz-Birkenau was one of the few camps that did the branding of the arm.
I was in six camps, Majdanek. Majdanek was an extermination camp, people counted twice a day. During the time in Majdanek, I was only 1 month because they needed tailors and shoemakers, and they sent us to a different camp, to Blizhin. Over there was 1 year, and I got the typhus. After the Russian offensive, they didn't have any use anymore for making any new clothes, so they shipped us to Birkenau. They put us in different barracks, and I didn't want to go with the kids because usually the kids, they would separate, and they're the first one to be exterminated. They put up a piece of wood, and on top piece of wood, wherever is lower from this measurement, they would take the extermination camp. So I stand up myself straight, and I was a little higher because I touched the top of the wood, and I stayed like that.
Did you ever find out what was going on in the experimental area? You said there was where you saw the jars.
No, I had no idea what they are doing there. The only thing I know that I met a girl whom I knew from next town, And she came back one day. I met her in front of the kitchen, and her hair was completely gray. I looked at her. I said, "What happened to you? Where were you?" She said, "One night I went out to go to the bathroom, and they caught me. They took me to a place. They locked me into this room, and they put a rat into the room with me. And in the meantime, there was some fumes that was coming into the room. And I don't know how long I was there. I don't know how not, but I know that when I opened my eyes, the rat was dead, and I looked at it. So after that, they opened the door and they took me out and they gave me new clothes and they feed me and they gave me everything. And she really looked so well fed, and from whatever experiment they were doing with her, that's what turned her hair completely gray, completely. And she looked like 100 years old. The girl couldn't be more than 14, 15 years old. That was one occasion that I attended.
Nobody could approach that place in my garden because apparently they would kill the animals and make lampshades out of babies or so.
I saw the pig. Now she could make soap from people. So when people come to make soap, she came in the military. Burned water. Big oof.
We have seen soap made out of human beings.
R.I.F. meant rein jüdisch fett. Pure Jewish fat.
R.J.F. And R.J.F. meant rein jüdisches fat, translated clean Jewish fat.
Pure Jewish soap, you know, rein jüdisch fat.
Pure Jewish fat, rein jüdisches fat.
Still, the manager, the Oberscharführer gave me a piece of soap. He said, "Hast du Schnitzel you desire?" Made out of Jewish fat.
Going back to Birkenau, there were enormous tanks in Birkenau, way on a side, and not far from the open pyres, and there was a lake of ashes, and that's where they dumped all the ashes from the crematorium, which is now full and solid. When I was there, I said Kaddish over there. Those ashes are my mother's grave. And I went there, I felt I was, I said Kaddish at the crematorium, I said Kaddish at the ashes, and then at the ashes, that's where it was dumped. That's where my mother is, my grandfather. There were these large vats, looks like oil tanks that you have seen now, these oil tanks in places where they keep fuel oil. I know now that these vats were bodies. They were fermenting them. They were trying to make use of the Jews or the prisoners. Then, trying to convert them to gas, like propane, let's say, or whatever it is. I don't know the chemical name. So they could fuel the tanks and their trucks and what have you. So there were, quote, scientists working on trying to make use of all these bodies they were burning. Of course, everybody knows now. And I have not, because one twin actually came back, that the twins all along were experimented on. There were Carpath women where twins were butchered, supposedly trying to find out what makes a twin so that they could have German women give multiple births so they could populate the world with German Aryans. Going back to Mauthausen, then it was a daily occurrence that there were constantly shots fired, and that like two or three times a day, a group of 10, 15, 20 people would be marched out, and like a half an hour later, you heard shots. Nobody ever came back. It turns out that the commandant's son, a young boy, was having either his father or whatever, had all these inmates daily marching out in the field for his target practice.
Singer. And one day we were working in a place, Hamburg Sternschanze or Hamburg Altona. I don't remember exactly in which place it was, because we were working in both of these places. There was a slaughterhouse. They let out a bull to attack the workers. This bull attacked my mother very seriously, cut open all her face. From that day on, she never could go to work anymore. She was laying in a sick bay in the camp, very seriously ill. And
I noticed that a SS, high-ranking SS officer approached. That was the infamous Dr. Josef Mengele, the angel of death, the man who would decide our fate. Instant death in a gas chamber, or lingering life of torture and slavery. We had to file by him. As we did, I noticed that he had a slender stick, actually was a conductor's baton, being a musician, even at 13. And so I recognized it, and he was waving it to the right or to the left. He was pointing which way each individual who filed by him to go.
Da sehen Sie, warum ich 40 Jahre lang nichts gesagt habe und ich bin 90%ig Kriegsinvalid. Ne? Mein Arsch ist noch blöder, ja, ich bin doch. Die Nazis haben mir Holzen von 25 cm in den Arsch gemacht. Da sehen Sie, warum ich 40 Jahre lang nichts gesagt habe und ich bin 90%ig Kriegsinvalid. Ne? Mein Arsch ist noch blöder, ja, ich bin doch. Die Nazis haben mir Holzen von 25 cm in den Arsch gemacht. Die Nazis haben mir Holzen von 25 cm in den Arsch gemacht.
My parents found somebody else who would hide us. It was a Ukrainian family, and we were hidden in the barn. The barn had rats bigger than dogs running around there, but we had to live in the barn. The barn had rats bigger than dogs running around there. Anyway, my mother, because of hunger, I guess, she had got swollen legs. What they call it is like elephantitis, because they were very heavy. She couldn't reach them together. And there used to be a building where they took sick people. Obviously, there was not a Red Cross or anything. You might have gone to the guest chamber there or what have you. And we stayed in that barrack for a while, and somehow I was fortunate that I was able to go with my mother, because I told them that I was sick too, and the lady was kind of kapos, because the kapos who ran some of those camps, they were mean and miserable. But anyway, they let me stand there, and we stayed there for a while, just a few days, and you used to always hear, even in your Auschwitz, a rumbling of artillery and things. The Russians were going to come closer. And one night, and that was January 27th, which now they have a special Holocaust memorial now for January 27. It was on Monday they had the memorial for international memorial for the Holocaust survivors, and we were liberated.
We had to, they loaded us on a truck and there was one truck man, a driver, that was so immersively ugly, so inhumane. His truck had a little board around the platform, one board. And so when he loaded us on the truck, unless you stood right by the where he drives, what do you call that? The cab of it. He would make a turn at 50 miles an hour, where one would pull the other trying to hold on, and consequently it would fall off. At which point he got hysterical and backed up. And we inevitably took with us always one or two bodies to the camp, because we had to bring the 50 people, regardless of dead or alive. He was so ugly that whenever we were assigned to his truck, we knew somebody was going to die.
But talking about Auschwitz, that I didn't talk very much about it, the thing that I remember, which shows you how you can humiliate people. In Auschwitz used to be septic tanks from the big lavatories, as I just explained. And
The first thing they done when I was there, to put in a fellow that I knew very well, he was a cantor, and they put him in the septic tank, sitting up till here. Catholic priests, ministers, they all put him down. We had to walk by every day to see him. And they literally died in there after 6 days, 7 days, something like that. They kept him in there. And this was just a method, because, you know, you have to, we have to understand at that particular period, the respect for a rabbi, or a priest, or a minister, or a cantor, was a different perception than today we live with it. It's quite different. At that time, they were like God. I mean, the respect was tremendous for these people. And here you see him sitting in the septic tanks, forgive me for the expression, with all this crap up to the neck, and we had to walk by every day to see them. They made a point to do that. The coppers used to round us up, we had to walk by. And this was just to break your spirit, whatever methods he had in order, just to get you in the kind of mood that he wants you to be. Priests and rabbis, yeah, and cantors, and all religious, anybody from religious sect, they started out. This was right at the beginning when they came in. In fact, these people came with the same transports that we came in.
Then one day came a assessment, and they took the children away. They were my pets, Tito and Nino. One of them was a hunchback. I don't remember exactly, 2 or 3 days after, another SS man brought them back in a terrible state. They were cutted. The boy or the girl, the hunchback, was thrown to the other one, back to back. The priest, back to back. It was a terrible smell also, already gangrene. The cuttings were dirty, and the children did cry day and night.
אני לא יודע מדוע, אבל היו לנו גם גמדים, כמו שאמרתי. אז לקחו, היה אחד שם בדוקטור, אדון לוי, אוהב, שהיה מה שאני קורא קוואדרופלג, זאת אומרת, גם הידיים שלו לא כל כך יקודים, גם הרגליים. והביאו צועניה, זה כנראה עדיין כשהצוענים נשארו אחד אבל פה ושם, השכיבו אותה על הרצפה, שמו אותו להזדבגות, לגמד. עליה, וכולנו היינו צריכים לראות, אסור היה, אם מישהו היה מזיז את הראש, לא רק תאומים, יכול היה לקבל כדור מהגרמני. אותו אדון לוי הוא גם נפטר תוך יום, עכשיו מזה, בכלל הוא היה כבר חולה מאוד, זה אני לא.
Dude, right. So FTJ does shorts now. You should literally put like at least one of these clips up a week.
That's a good idea.
Like just take one little clip.
If regular people knew some of these lies, they'd be like, is this a new movie? Is this a horror movie that's come out? Of course there was a quadriplegic dwarf who was forced to rape a gypsy and died from it. He literally died from raping her, a quadriplegic dwarf. Have some respect, damn it.
This is, oh my God, this was too good. Like, you said you got more of this, like, seriously.
Oh,
like.
I've got so much, and you can find a lot of it right on that the United States Holocaust Museum website, because the Shoah Foundation actually keeps the shit.
Of course they do. Like, oh my God, if you ever want help with editing, let me know.
Oh, that would be awesome. I've been slowly learning UCut, but okay. I'm sure there are better things out there. But
I know if you're still on Windows, I really liked Filmora. Now, it does splash the big old watermark across it unless you actually get the paid tier. On Linux, there's like a bunch of different options that we've been looking at. I know Eagle's been using Caden Live. He said, okay. That's really, really good. But yeah, there's a whole bunch of different programs out there you can use. So, but yeah, and like I will even build you like little intro and outros if you want.
Yeah, we're going to have to do that.
Yeah, it'll be good. Oh, my God. This was good though. This whole series was good. I think this was the perfect note to end on. Just laughing. I'm gonna have to go back and rewatch that video probably.
Yeah, I think I should have like done a more close up of the writing. Each of the pictures accompanies a true story in a book.
Yeah.
No, I liked the one with the grandpa was frozen in the freezer, and when he fell out, he just broke into a million pieces. And then the room with the hanging knives. They're so creative, you know?
They really – the only one that still actually gets me angry – I can laugh at most of them, but the one that really still gets to me for some reason is the stupid soap. And I should be able to laugh at that, but I think it's just such a disgusting concept that – that one still gets.
And did you hear them? One said RIF and the other one said RJF. They can't even keep their own stories straight. Well, if it was Juden, then it would be J, RJF, pure Juden fat.
Yep.
But it's a very good point. And some Jews have acknowledged that. Why would the Nazis want to wash themselves with us?
Yeah. Well, and actually, I had a question about that. So like everyone talks about, oh, the evidence at all the different camps of, you know, whether it's the crematoria or what have you. I've never heard of anyone say, well, yeah, we found evidence of soap processing, because like making soap is like, you got to have a setup for that. You got to have big vats. And like, right. I've never heard of any evidence of anything on that level.
No, I've never seen any pictures of any supposed, machines or anything. The only thing I've ever heard was one of the prisoners had said that he was forced to help make the soap. We know that it's been debunked officially by the U.S. Holocaust Museum. They've officially said that there's no proof either way that soap was made, but there's actually Jews who still say that their relatives were made into soap. So again, another story. They can't agree on their lies.
No, they really can't. And that's something like it's good because it gives us a very valid point to hit them on. Like, look, you guys can't even keep your story straight. But it's also, for me, I find it a very good reminder that, you know, there's division amongst those ranks too. You know, all these different factions of Jews that don't get along.
Of course.
So I like when we can start seeing those fracture lines. It gives us an idea of maybe where we can start poking more or putting more pressure and kind of ramp up the propaganda war, if nothing else.
Right. I it's funny you brought that up. I recently read a little bit about the Chabad Lubavitch. Mm. Yeah. And I guess they're like an ultra Orthodox. Like a lot of Jews don't like them. Mm-hmm. I guess some Jews would say they're barely Jewish. But they're very like occultish, and they're
I'm
really satanic shit, I guess.
Damn, Eagle's asleep, or I'd bring him on and make him like he's been studying these fuckers for so long, and like the Chabad Lubavitch group, he's particularly knowledgeable on. I'll have to pick his brain later, but they're they're bad.
I guess they're the highest up. Here and in Russia, they're like, they're the ones you bow down to, I guess. Though, I mean, BB as well and all that, but.
Yeah, they seem to be the ones that kind of run everything. Like, they run the Jews that run everything else.
I mean, and we know that there is division between Jews because they have very strict rules about going to genteel police. Mm-hmm. Or telling Gentiles anything bad that a Jew has done, you'll be called a Moser or a traitor. You could be kicked out, mm-hmm. and once they kick you out, you're not acknowledged anymore as a Jew. And so, if we can break them up, it's not that they're gonna ever turn to our side, but it's easier to take groups down, you know, smaller groups.
Oh yeah,
them all at one time.
Yeah, we couldn't bring them to our side, whether people want to say that or not. No, we can't. And honestly, I don't think we should even try.
Oh,
I don't want them.
a leopard never changes their spots, you know. They're demons. You can't make them human. They will never be human.
No. Best you can do is, I mean, Hail Mary pass, learn how to do a summoning circle and send their asses back to the pit. Like,
yeah.
Maybe we can grind up some of the leftover bone and make Jew chalk.
There you go.
And just start carving like anti-demon symbols with this Jew chalk.
Yeah, that I shared that cremation video on the on Twitter, and I thought it was well received. And so then I shared something about Anne Frank, and I got a Jew. I got a Jew who wouldn't leave me alone. It's like, that's not right. She wasn't turned in by another Jew. It's like, sure, okay. It doesn't matter. He tried to say that everything I said was crap, and it's like, no.
Listen, bitch, receipts. You got to bring receipts when you do this.
No, I completely ignored him, let him run his mouth, and
yep.
It's like, you know, I'm not going to sit here and argue with you.
No, it's pointless. You'd have more luck beating your head beating a brick wall down with your head. You know, yeah. Give it 20 years, you might make a dent. But, yeah, that's how I do it. Like, I haven't had people really come at me on Twitter or other places often. There's been one or two. And I just block and go on my way because...
No, I'm here to share knowledge, to share with my people and to wake my people up. I mean, it can be fun. You know, it's kind of fun sometimes to troll, but I'm not going to gain anything from arguing with a Jew. If anything, I'm going to get frustrated because I don't have a very good temperament to handle people, some people sometimes, you know?
Oh, I feel you.
I did customer service for a little bit, and I learned I'm not a customer service kind of person.
Customer service / retail is an interesting field. Everybody thinks that you want the really sweet, helpful, kind kid. No. They're darlings, but they don't last. You basically need some salty bitches.
Yes.
I will tell you this. Don't ever play poker with like a hardened 20-year retail veteran to be able to bluff you right under the table. Because the one thing we're good at is we know how to lie.
I can see that, yeah. So. Well, you know who's making up poker videos now? The sisters with the big asses, the fake asses. And
oh, the Kardashian.
A Kardashian now makes poker videos. She's teaching people how to play poker. I'm like, and she's sitting there in a bra as she's mm-hmm. teaching people how to do it. I'm like, you're really useless. Just like it's about as useful as a tissue, you know?
Yeah. Why are they still a thing? Are they still a thing? I don't know.
They are though. One of them even owns like multiple billion-dollar businesses, and all because they're half mutts, they're half niggers with fake lips and asses, and
yeah, like yeah. Who decided they were the metric of feminine beauty? Gross.
No, let's have all the little girls look up to them. They didn't even like themselves enough that they had to put a bunch of plastic and shit into their own bodies.
Yeah, I mean, and I actually said that in one time, and I think it was my one sister was like, that's really mean. Why would you body shame? I'm like, because they deserve it.
Yeah, they obviously don't like their own body, so you know, why am I going to like it? It's like the fucking trainees. You couldn't accept yourself the way you were born, so why am I going to accept you? Why am I going to accept anything about you that you say?
Yeah, up to a certain age, I have more sympathy for the trannies in some cases, especially the younger ones right now, because they've been brainwashed. Like, I've seen video clips of this bitch sitting there with an 18-month-old in her lap. This is my trans toddler. I'm like, are you kidding?
Mm-hmm. That's straight-up child abuse. Straight-up child abuse.
It is. It's disturbing on so many levels. And it's like, if you thought I was going to come in here and be this sweet, kind, compassionate woman, well, hi, I'm salty. I'm a National Socialist.
No, you know what? I try to harden my emotions. No, I try to steel myself. But obviously, you know, I am a mother and mm-hmm. I still have feelings. So I know in this role we have in the war that is coming, mm-hmm. we can't be emotional.
No.
Mm-hmm. Not until, no, we have won and we have our people and we have our way of life back. But till then, it's, no, you kind of gotta be a bitch.
Yeah. And that's a role we've always carried historically as women. Like we've studied that some of the different women we've studied on previous White Power Women's Hours, like Boudica, and other ones where it's like these women were not pushovers.
Right.
And this concept that, you know, to be a traditional woman was just means to be June Cleaver at home baking bread or some shit. Like, no, you know, let's remember Lassie's mom. Remember Lassie? She was out on the frontier. Like, she'd pick up a shotgun if she had to. Yeah. That's where we need to be at. It's great to be able to be completely in a domestic role. We're not there yet.
No, so. We can't have all the nice things right now. So right now we deal with what we do have. And so if I got to be nasty with someone, then I'm going to have to be nasty with someone.
I mean, I kind of enjoy it. It's like a really good release valve for me when I get to be like bitchy and nasty.
It is kind of funny. Well, I get to see it. As soon as I start, the kids roll their eyes and they're like, oh God, here we go again. And it's like, well, you know, it's the fucking Jews. Every time it's the Jews. You know, whenever I complain about something, they just know. It's like, I'm not some pushover. I used to be that way when I used to care so much about what people really thought about me. And then you realize that bonds really aren't as strong as you think they are because when you have a different opinion, then you're just a Nazi.
Yeah.
So now I realize who's on my side and who's not.
Yep.
And I'm sticking up with the people who are on my side and who will be there when the time comes.
Well, like you said earlier, the ones that are going to stand shoulder to shoulder with you on the firing line when that moment comes, you know, that's who we're here for our Volks. So
it's looking at my children each night and saying, you're going to have a safe place. Mm-hmm. That's it. And if you get in the way of that, then it's going to be problems.
Yeah.
Not to sound like a tough guy. I'm not some mobster or anything like that. But I'm just a mom who wants a safe place for my children.
Yeah. Well, and Pagan Brain Salty, just dropping this in here real quick. All of the deities of death, destruction, vengeance, warfare, most of them were female historically. So really? there's a reason for that. Yeah. Oh, yeah. You never piss off Mama Bear, whether it's a fine Aryan mother or a mother goddess, because she will fuck your shit up. Like, that is part of it. Well, I mean, if you look at it historically, the men went out. They hunted. They gathered. They went to war. They defended the home in that capacity. But who do you think was running it and defending it at the home? You know?
True. Just like during the world wars. Mm-hmm. So when the men went off. So women had to take on the role of both parents, at least, you know, supporting the house, because I'm sure that they weren't paid very much while they were actually at wartime.
Yeah. Well, and even going further back than that, historically, the first teachers of children are always mom. So who do you think was first teaching little tiny Spartan toddler boys which end of the spear to stick in the bad guy?
True. Good point.
You know, it always started with mom. Mom always had to know these things, at least to some extent. So to say that that's not our role at all is not going to help us. But I'm
no, really I think to... I think people will take like the image from like the 1950s, 1940s wives, where they were, you know, very meek and submissive. But I think people forget too that at that time, I think there was a lot of abuse in homes, a lot of violence. Mm-hmm. And there was, you know, a lot of fags in the closet. Mm-hmm. So some people stayed married even though the man was a fag or the, you know, one of them was abusive. So it wasn't always the case that they just get along happily, you know, it's just a sitcom kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, think about when TV really came out. 1950s, got big in the 50s and 60s, and it started pushing that propaganda right away. Right. Like, we just been rewatching Guilty Pleasure. I like watching old episodes of, like, McHale's Navy. Because it's fun to just laugh at the ridiculousness of it. But, you know, it's like you sit there and you even pick it apart. And, like, oh, they're changing this metric. They're changing that metric. I was a little more familiar with some of the history of the Pacific Theater in World War II because one of my grandfathers was in that theater, and I heard more stories about that, you know, from the family.
Right.
But so it's like sitting there like going, that never happened. It can be fun. We play a game called Spot the Subversion. I don't know if anyone else does that.
Nice.
Or we'll just watch.
I've never thought about that, but.
And it's crazy, as the more you learn, the more you pick up, you know, we'll have to do a whole episode about that and just play different video clips of like the most oddball shows, like, 'cause it shows up in the weirdest spots.
Yeah, definitely.
So, oh my, well, we're already, oh damn, it is 6:59. So we should probably get our butts off of here. I know we've got Flood and some other big ones coming up after us. So, yeah. I just kind of trailed off there. Okay, let's say, I never said hi to the chats in the beginning, but we'll definitely give everyone a shout out and say so long and thanks for all the fish. Over in 88, we had a Sniper's Ghost, Bankster, Julius School of Fish, Kermy, Nazi Werewolf, okay, he spelled it different, Nazi Werewolf, Reaper was in the house, it's so good to see Reaper again, it's been a minute. Shlomo 88, our brother north of the border, Sergeant Snackles, Unruled Peeking, oh, Unruled's lurking, I see. Woman in the Shoe 88 just joined out and was hanging. I know Eagle Pax Max was in here. Sniper's Ghost. Did I say Sniper's Ghost? I did not, but now I did. Oh wait, I did say. If I repeat you, I'm sorry. If I miss you, I'm even more sorry. I think I got everyone over here. So let's scoot back on over here to FTJ. And we had Joey hanging out with us tonight, Snail Racer, Sage, also good to see you, been a minute, brother, good to have you back, School of Fish over, School of Fish pulling double duty, Sista Teresa Walsh, Whitman, Filthy, Walter Mauser, Thomas E. Dwyer, always good to see you, sir, Miss Hitler hanging out, Kermy, oh, Dave Gahari. Did you just jump in, Dave, or were you lurking and I just missed it? Duckweed, Unobtrusive. I think I got everybody. Aw, thanks, Dave. And I did want to do this one last thing. Special extra thank you to Thomas E. Dwyer, Duckweed, and Kermy for your very generous support. That was very kind, gentlemen.
Thank you,
all
guys.
Great, all greatly appreciated. All right, so now that I've clicked the right buttons... Woot! I didn't accidentally turn the stream off this time. It's a Monday miracle. So I'm going to get ready to play a song and get you all on your way on Monday. Hopefully this is the start to a white fucking power week for everybody. I can tell I'm getting tired because I'm dropping the F-bomb more and more and more. But... everybody check out all the streamers on FTJ, all the streamers on 88 Streams, and all the other platforms. There's lots of platforms. Those are the two I'm on. I'm a creature of habit. I like to stay, you know, in my lane. I can't think of the name of the song. Camp Grenon. There, okay. I found it. There's also awesome merch you can buy on both sites. Both, you know, we got banned by Amazon on FTJ, and we have got the 88 merch store, which is also equally fantastic. Tomorrow, speaking of segueing in tomorrow, guys, I'm going to do sort of a Salty Does Home Shopping Network where I'm just going to bring up different white fucking power businesses. So we'll be taking a look at different businesses' webpage, showing what they have to offer, making sure you guys got links. If you can think of any, even small businesses, if you have one, if you know of one that you want to see promoted on the stream, just drop me a link either on Telegram or right on Twitter, on X, and let me know. And we're gonna hit as many as we can in the hour and a half or so that we are on. And we definitely will try and get some white power business going their way. So, all right,
that'll be a fun time.
I think so. It's something I've wanted to do for a while, and I kind of was running. I was like, "Oh crap! I have an extra. I have 5 Tuesdays this month, so I gotta find something to fill it with." Ooh, shopping episode. It's funny. It's the only way I do shopping. I can't stand shopping, typically. So, all right, guys, have a fucking white power.
White power.
GRANADA, Camp Granada, bleh!
Hello, mother. Hello, father. I am back at Camp Granada, and I'm writing you this letter just to say my compound fracture's getting better. No one here knows where my trunk is and my bunk is, where the skunk is and the food is, years improving. All the little black things in it are not moving. Our camp nurse is quite a swimmer. She says swimming makes you slimmer. Her name's Mrs. Pellegrini. Have you ever seen a whale in a bikini? All the bathrooms have such thin doors. Gee, I wish they'd move them indoors. We're all tired of Mother Goose here. So next Friday night they're having Lenny Bruce here. Let me stay, oh Mother Father, let me stay. I love Granada every night. The campfire is so keen. Oh ma, please send some unguentine. Let me stay out here in Mother Nature's land and tiptoe through the tulips grand. To leave would be a shame. Besides, I'd miss the poker game. Please don't worry, Fada Mada, I'll take care of little brother. He plays ball here and he rows here, and I hope they teach him how to blow his nose here. He wakes up at 6:30 and goes directly to the quicksand. He was lonely, now he's better. He's like all of us, except his bed is wetter.